Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Oh, what would that be used for?
For my submarine.
Submarine.
If you're huge like HSBC, you know, you're just like a whole bunch of elephants ploughing through the jungle and you can just kind of do it. If you're small, you just have to be smarter.
Today, there's 43 building societies in the UK.
You've got a spare seat at your dinner party. Do you invite Nigel Farage or Donald Trump?
Neither. I put a teddy bear in their place.
Welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Here are your hosts, Mike and Nate.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Coming up on today's show, what does the future hold for building societies?
So, what do we have to look forward to today? We'll be joined by Robin Fiefe, Chief Executive of the Building Societies Association, to take us through his vision of how he thinks about the future for building societies. But first, we have Mark Bogard, the CEO of the Family Building Society. So for those paying attention, that's two big cheeses, which means two Skittlemanias. But first, what exactly is a building society? It was in a Birmingham pub back in 1775 that landlord Richard Ketley founded the first building society. Fueled by the need for more housing in the wake of the industrialisation of the city that was beginning to burst at the seams.
Ketley's building society may well be the oldest example of crowdfunding out there. Members would pay in a monthly subscription, which was then used to fund the construction of houses for them. Once every member had their own house, the building society would be terminated.
In the 1840s, this all began to change as the first permanent building societies started to appear. New members could now sign up and save even if they were not looking to buy a home. The Scottish Building Society was one of the earliest examples of this, and it still exists today, making it the oldest surviving building society in the world.
By 1910, building societies had over 620,000 members. The increased availability of building society mortgages meant that more of us could own our own homes. And by 1940, a third of all Britons were homeowners, a figure that increased to over 60% by the turn of the century.
Today, there's 43 building societies in the UK, and they're responsible for some 27% of gross mortgage lending.
And building societies are still owned by their members, so they don't have any shareholders looking to squeeze out big profits. And the unique and sometimes quirky savings and mortgage product offering that these building societies provide still appeals, particularly to those overlooked by the big banks. Is it a model that puts customers before profit? In this week's Money Bites, we're asking, what does the future hold for building societies?
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
This week, we'll be grilling two big cheeses. And first up, we have Mark Bogard, the CEO of the Family Building Society based in Epsom and home of the Windfall Bond. The Money Bites grill is heating up, so it's time to get grilling. Mark, thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a bit more about the Family Building Society?
So the Family Building Society was the first new building society launched just over 5 years ago. It grew out of a much older building society which was set up to help postmen. But we thought that focusing on how families work together to make the most of their money was something that people really needed with the way that people live today.
Your best known product is probably this Windfall Bond. Can you tell us a bit more about how it works and if it's basically like a premium bond?
It is, but we're not really allowed to say that. The thing that we discovered in talking to people is that with interest rates so low at the moment, getting, you know, 0.5% or 1% on their money, particularly if you have to pay tax on that, was something that was almost useless for people because they couldn't live on that anymore. And people were prepared to trade some of that interest in order to potentially win a much larger sum of money. So the Windfall Bond, you can win up to £50,000. The most common prize is £1,000. You have to put a minimum of £10,000 in, but you have a 1 in 64 chance of winning, which is an awful lot higher than your chance of winning on a premium bond. And it still pays bank base rate, so you still get 0.75% interest. People value that, but they trade the slightly higher interest that you could get somewhere else for the chance of winning a big prize. And we've got some very happy people out there who have won the prizes.
And the market out there, it's just changing so fast. We're seeing all these new kind of competitors come in, whether it's the likes of app-only banks like Starling and Monzo, or newer banks, likes of kind of Atom and Charter Savings. What do you think, given the environment and what lies ahead, what do you think the top three challenges are for building societies?
The most interesting thing to me about the question you've just asked me is that when I was working for Barclays in the mid-90s, Barclays was thinking about all of the things you've just said, and internet banking was coming along, and you saw other industries where traditional players were being blown out of the water by new players. So today, EasyJet and Ryanair are much bigger than British Airways, and people like Barclays were very worried that that was going to happen to them too. And the interesting thing today is that that hasn't happened. And there are a whole bunch of challenges set up at the time called things like Egg and Mint and, ING Bank, Scottish Widows Bank. And effectively, they've all disappeared. And the big banks still have a vast share of the market. In answering your question, I don't know why those people haven't succeeded, whereas clearly Amazon has succeeded, Ryanair has succeeded. There have been a whole bunch of challenges in other sectors. And when someone really comes to understand why the big banks still have the vast majority of financial services in the UK and the big insurance companies, then someone will succeed. But at the moment, all of the people you mention aren't a rounding error for the big guys. And they're interesting and they're sexy. You know, my kids have signed up for having a Monzo account because they think it's trendy. But the interesting thing is 100% of the money they've got is still in Lloyds. I don't know the answer to your question. In terms of challenges for building societies, if you're smaller, you just have to be smarter. So you have to come up with products which are highly relevant to people's needs, which the big banks don't serve. And the big banks, particularly in the mortgage market, but also on the deposit side, just want to deal with tens or hundreds of thousands of people or millions of people. They're not that interested in treating people as individuals. So when we underwrite a mortgage, each one of those is done by hand. If you go to a big bank, your details are fed through into a computer. And if you lived in the same place for 2 years, you've got no bad credit flags and you've got three pay slips, which the computer can look at. They will give you a mortgage. If you're more complicated, you know, if you're self-employed, if you've done a bunch of different jobs, if you've got more than one job, all of that, the computer hates that. And that's what, you know, we and other societies like us offer, is treating individuals as individuals.
And I guess that's been really key for many building societies around how they plan to compete, certainly in the mortgage front, which is incredibly aggressive from a rate perspective at the moment. It's finding those underserved niches and bringing to market a product and distributing it in the right way. Is there anything else that the Family Building Society is planning to do or to change about the way it operates, given the current environment?
We just have to get smarter and serve people better. 90% of the mortgages we write come through mortgage brokers. Mortgage brokers are looking at the whole of the market, so they're finding the best place for their customer. And we have to deal with those mortgage brokers as quickly and as efficiently as possible. They want pace and certainty of decision. So if we say in principle that we'll give someone a mortgage, then we see that through. On the deposit side, other than the windfall bond, we've got a market tracker product. So that tracks the top 20 instant access rates and averages them out. So rather than having to keep moving your money about, you know, as various people come and go in the market and try and drop the rate and hope you don't move, our rate will always give you a rate. It'll never be the top because it's an average, but it'll be there or thereabouts. And it's things like that which the big banks, you know, just don't need to do and often can't, don't dare to do.
What do you think the future holds for building societies? The title question of our episode this week.
I think the future for building societies is good. They have to be imaginative, they have to operate at pace, they have to keep up, and they really have to think things through. If you're huge like HSBC, you know, you're just like a whole bunch of elephants ploughing through the jungle and you can just kind of do it. If you're small, you just have to be smarter. And we've come up with a range of products. You know, we've got a family mortgage where parents and grandparents can help kids. We did a low start mortgage, which we called a sort of divorced dad's mortgage. So when people get divorced, their finances tend to be messed up and you need to help them get back on their feet. You know, we do a lot of later life lending, so we'll do a new mortgage for an 89-year-old. The big banks don't like that because they're complicated cases and they're tricky if something goes wrong. So you just have to serve individuals, and you have to be smart about how you do that without doing stuff that's too risky.
And lastly, Mark, if you had to sum up what you think a modern mutual should look like in three words, what would you say?
Unconventional.
Two more?
No, that's my three words.
All right, awesome. Well, look, Mark, it's been a pleasure. Next up, it's Skittlemania. We put 30 Skittles into Cup A and given our guest a pair of chopsticks. Over 90 seconds, Mark will attempt to get as many Skittles into Cup B as possible while being quizzed a little bit more. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittlemania.
Right.
Ready? So in 3, 2, let's go. Mark, do you have a favourite mark from history?
Do I have a favourite mark from history? I can't think of any. Mark Antony.
What's your favourite coloured Skittle?
Orange. Counts as one of your five a day.
Dogs, cats or rabbits?
Dogs.
What would you make as your main dish on your night on Come Dine With Me?
Chinese duck pancakes.
Oh, that sounds tasty. We're 30 seconds in now, Mark. How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
44,000.
If you had a pet giraffe, what would you call it?
Gerald.
Gerald the giraffe. If you were given a free Glastonbury ticket and could pick anyone to headline, dead or alive, who would you pick?
Elvis.
That is quite a choice. Approaching a minute now, Mark. How old were you when you found out the truth about Santa Claus?
8.
Is a hot dog a sandwich or not?
No.
How are you doing on the Skittle count? Let's...
Rubbish.
There's a few in there. What's your favourite holiday destination?
Greenland.
Have you been?
Yes.
How many times?
Once. Fantastic place. Completely changes your life.
Wow. 6 seconds left. 3, 2, 1. Stop. And how many Skittles
8
has Mark got?
I did a few at the beginning and a few at the end, but in the middle. It's actually better to hold it further away.
That's true. There's 8 Skittles for Mark from the Family Building Society. Well, look, Mark, thank you for joining us on today's episode of Money Bites. We look forward to welcoming you again in the future.
Thank you very much.
So, that positions Mark in joint 4th place alongside Norris Couple of Moniz on our Skittlemania leaderboard. Please find Smart Money People on Twitter to see the full leaderboard. A minor spoiler, but it's still I, Nate Harwood, the spectacular Skittle sensation who reigns supreme.
Hi, this is the Yorkshire Building Society. How can I help?
Hi there, lovely to speak to you. I have an inquiry. Is this the mortgage department, yes?
It is, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, I was watching a motion picture just the other day, and they discussed subprime mortgages. And, I'm an owner of a submarine myself, and I thought, well, you know, my submarine is in prime condition, so I'd love one of those, please. Could I have one of your subprime mortgages, please?
Oh, what would that be used for?
For my submarine.
Submarine?
Yes. Me and my wife, Meredith, we reside in a submarine.
Right, okay. As in, under the water?
Sometimes we like to come to the surface, but when we're travelling, it's mostly underwater, yes. But we live
right,
there, so
okay.
It's our home.
Right, okay. But you do move around in it?
Yes, well, it's a mobile home.
And how much are you looking to borrow from us?
Okay, well, let's say somewhere in the region of £100,000 sterling.
Lovely. And what would you say your submarine is valued at?
Since the last valuation was around £2 million.
Further question. So how often do you spend on sort of land and how often do you spend underwater?
I'd say it's about a 50-50 split.
50-50 split.
Yes.
When you say underwater, whereabouts do you sort of reside?
Well, we try and stay within the British seaboard, so mostly within borders.
I've just spoken to our underwriters, and unfortunately, based on what your criteria is, we won't be able to lend on that.
No, that makes sense. But do you think I could have better luck overseas?
I'm not sure. Really sorry, Samuel. You might have to just see it up around.
Meredith, set sail for New York! Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
No worries. Take care now.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye.
Meredith, New York, stat!
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
This week, we have Robin Feith, the CEO of the Building Society Association, which represents all of the UK's building societies and a growing number of credit unions. Robin, thank you for joining us today. Can you tell us what the Building Societies Association does?
Yeah, we do two things simply. We are there to champion all our members, and that includes, as you just said, six credit unions. And we support all our members with a whole range of everything from technical advice to events and so on.
And I guess over the next few years, the financial services sector looks to be getting a lot more competitive and a lot more challenging for a lot of firms. What do you think are the top three challenges for building societies in particular?
Well, I think Michael, the challenges are there for everyone. And as you said, it's an incredibly competitive market. We continue to be in conventionally extraordinary economic times of very low interest rates for long and huge amounts of quantitative easing, which has actually created lots and lots of money in the market that has got to find a home. So really, really challenging times. But building societies, I think, have proved just how resilient their model is over the last 10 years since the crisis, particularly by consistently taking market share. So in a hugely competitive mortgage market, building societies, every single quarter bar one since 2012, have grown their share of the market. And I think that demonstrates the success in facing those challenges. But it is a really tough market, and it's a market where there's a huge amount of change going on. Lots of innovation, lots of digital innovation now as well. Huge challenges in that. Particularly, I think, how do you continue to keep a genuine customer and member relationship in a world that is increasingly digital, or in a world that is increasingly driven by brokers and platforms and things like that?
That is definitely a challenge. It's expensive having branches, and that's something that digital incumbents don't have. They've built models that are cheaper to run than having a massive branch-based distribution network. I guess, what do you think the three opportunities are for building societies? What makes them excited about the future?
Well, branches is a real opportunity because they are there on the high street, combined with the fact, and there's a big difference here between building societies and many, not all, but many of the newcomers. Building societies make money. They are sustainable in the long term. It's very difficult, I think, and I used to run a technology business. It's very difficult running a business in the long term if you're not making money, because actually you end up running out of it. So I think building societies have that resilience. The branches give you that really important face-to-face relationship. And sometimes that's your conventional customers, but actually what we see is the youngest generations really like going into branches, particularly to open their first accounts, or when something is difficult, when something goes wrong, and that might be something they've done wrong, may not be. So I think there are real advantages. And what we are seeing is increasingly is building societies being very innovative in the way they develop their branches as part of a community. Newcastle Building Society is a particular example where they've been going into communities that have lost their last branches and then working with the community to build new ones, effectively as a joint venture with the community.
Building societies essentially provide savings and mortgages to consumers. Do you think over the years to come, more building societies will venture outside of that? And I'm particularly thinking about potentially building homes and renting them out. Those kind of quirky things that a few of your members have started to do.
Yeah, I should say a few have started to do that, not at scale. And I don't think we will see that at scale. Building societies actually know what they're there for. They are there, as you say, to be a safe place for your savings, and then to help you fulfil that dream of home ownership, however that looks. So I think we will see more and more innovation in both savings and loans. We will see some development outside of that, but I don't think that's ever going to be core business. But it does in part. I love the things that Nationwide are doing in Swindon in building, in building really good housing. I love the stuff that Cambridge are doing in terms of having a couple of apartments with subsidised rents that effectively enable tenants to get onto the housing ladder. And I think those things we may well see more of.
And you talked about the sustainability of building societies and the fact that they do all make profits at the end of the year. How important do you think scale is going to be for building societies? So there's a vast range of building societies out there, from Nationwide, which is a massive building society that does all kinds of things, to some really small ones that have one branch and maybe only 30,000 members. Do you think the smaller ones are going to struggle to compete and remain profitable given their scale?
I think it's a really, really interesting question. And the comparison I quite often use is, so what do you think about retail shops? There are huge supermarkets and there are really successful small boutique delicatessens and butchers and so on. And actually, my view very strongly is that if you have a very clear understanding of why you're there and what your purpose is as a building society, and you have a very clear strategy for fulfilling that purpose, and you have a good management team to do it, actually you will succeed in most parts of the market. And the real advantage the small building societies have is they can be really nimble. And they're not under the pressure that listed companies are to produce quarterly results. So if markets are really tight, they can step back slightly. If there's more scope in the market, they can go move forward faster. If there are new opportunities in the market, they can take them, and they do. So I think there's a really positive future for the smallest, the medium-sized ones, who again have much greater flexibility. And Nationwide just demonstrated how strong they are as an organisation year in and year out.
So the title question of this episode is, what do you think the future holds for building societies? So what do you think the future holds for building societies, Robin?
Well, I'm really clear, and we've been really clear for in everything the BSA stands for in that championing of building societies. Building societies are an absolutely fundamental part of the future of financial services in the UK. They're a really important differentiation in terms of competition and choice for consumers. Actually, they're really important from the regulatory point of view as well, because they provide a completely different model in both in times of economic growth and in times of economic hardship. So so our position is very, and our view is really clear, that they have a very, very bright future and a growing future.
We asked Mark Bogard of the Family Building Society to sum up what a modern mutual is in three words, and he only had one word for us, and that was unconventional. What would you say the three words are that sum up a modern mutual?
All about members.
All about members. Well, look, Robin, it's been absolutely our pleasure to have you on this episode of Money Bites. Thank you very much for joining us. We're now going to go into Skittlemania.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittlemania.
We're off. Robin, what's your favourite coloured Skittle?
It's got to be the green one.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
No, a hot dog is a hot dog, just as a beef burger is a beef burger.
How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
Not something worth counting, frankly.
We are 30 seconds in.
And I've got one.
Oh, one Skittle.
One Skittle's gone.
That will start them off now.
These are even harder than rice, than bits of rice.
Do you have a favourite Robin from history?
Well, I have to say, having been walking in Sherwood Forest yesterday, it's got to be Robin Hood, isn't it?
Do you ask for a knife and a fork when given chopsticks at a Chinese restaurant?
Only when I'm trying to pick up Skittles.
That's a wise move. If you had a pet giraffe, what would you call it?
My favourite pet giraffe is Jolly Tall, and if you've never read Jolly Tall, you really should, especially to your children.
We'll give it a read. We're 1 minute in, Robin.
Which spice I'm on skill, two so far.
Two so far. Which spice skill would you want to be your landlord?
Definitely not scary.
Not scary. That's quite a common response. You've got a spare seat at your dinner party. Do you invite Nigel Farage or Donald Trump?
Neither. I put a teddy bear in their place.
We've got 5 seconds left, Robin. What's your favourite holiday destination?
France, every time.
And that's our time.
That's good. I got three. I got two out of three on the last one. I think I got six in there.
And Robin has six Skittles. That's a very respectable total. Well, look, Robin, thank you again for joining us on Money Bites. We look forward to welcoming you at some point in the future.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks very much for having me.
So that lands Robin just outside the Skittlemania leaderboard. Join us next week to find out if a new Skittle sensation has emerged.
And that's all we have time for in this week's Money Bites. Please, please, please review, subscribe, and why not visit us at Smart Money People. Goodbye.